Hello and welcome to another episode of the Studio One Planner podcast. Some days I talk to you guys and I'm like, what am I going to talk about? Today is not one of those days because this past week has been absolutely nuts for student loans and just reform in general and just discussions of student loan policy. It's been a little overwhelming, to be frank. Let me just, at a high level, go over some of the things that are happening with student loans right now. First off, you've got two of the big four servicers that have thrown up their hands and they're like, yo, we're out. Okay, Navient, FedLoan, they do not want to have anything to do with federal student loan servicing anymore. We'll talk about why that is a little bit later, and we'll talk about the timeline for them transitioning to new servicers and what that might mean for you if you happen to have loans at Navient or FedLoan. The third big piece of news, maybe third and fourth really, is President Biden is coming out with an executive order around public service loan forgiveness, according to a big bombshell article from NPR. In addition, there's also some circulations around what the negotiated rulemaking committee for Department of Education is thinking about doing when it comes to updating student loan policies, and they might be coming out with a new income-based repayment program. So like I told you, there's a whole lot going on right now. You know, if I think about things to get excited about, I will say that I am very excited about some of these changes and what they can mean for our clients and our listeners and readers. Some of this, though, makes me a little cynical, a little bit worried, because every time they come out with some big, exciting news, right, there's always issues with it. There's always execution problems, operational issues, things they didn't think about, policies that they didn't really think through carefully. One great example is Temporary Expanded Public Service Loan Forgiveness, TEPSLF, right? This was supposed to be the program that was going to fix all of those folks that had issues with PSLF that didn't get forgiven, that should have gotten forgiven. They passed this bill in Congress, provided a fairly decent amount of money for it, and then it just totally flopped because of bureaucratic mismanagement and problems. At a high level, why does all this stuff seem to happen? Well, whenever they come up with fixes for loan forgiveness programs, they tend to throw a ton of money at the actual loan forgiveness part of it, and then they provide almost no money at all for the operational side of things, of getting things done. So you might have hundreds of billions or tens of billions or just a couple hundred million promised towards a special loan forgiveness program. But then if you go and you provide tens of millions to loan servicers to go and execute that for 40-something million borrowers, it's going to fall flat on its face because they're going to go out, the servicers, they're going to hire according to the amount of money they're getting to guarantee themselves a profit margin. They're going to have some sort of fixed profit margin. They're going to go hire people for whatever is left over that they can go and spend money on according to what the government gave them. And so you've got Navient and FedLoan basically saying, you know what, this business model sucks. We don't want to have anything to do with this. Your problem now, go figure this out on your own. We're not interested in being a part of it. So, you know, I want to get excited about this because this could mean big savings for our audience if this stuff goes through like some of these reports are claiming. I'm just a little bit nervous based off of having done this for 5 years and knowing that there's going to be problems and maybe this will benefit some people while leaving other people out in the cold. So let's talk about what all this means. I mean, we could really have a whole episode on just one of these issues, but I guess I'll start off just talking a little bit about Navient and FedLoan and the student loan servicer changes that happened the past week or getting announced the past week. Nothing's really happening completely yet. So first off with Navient. Navient actually makes very little money on student loan servicing. It's kind of really interesting if you had to say, what is Navient from a revenue perspective? Navient is primarily a lender and a holder of FFEL loans, loans that existed before 2010. So Navient purchased Earnest, which, full disclosure, Earnest is one of our refinancing partners. So Navient makes student loan refinancing deals to people. They also have a Navi refi product that they refinance people that had their loans with Navient just in general. They make private in-school loans to people. So all of that accounts for the vast majority of the revenue. Student loan servicing was just this thing that they thought about getting into. And then they kind of thought about the pros and cons of being involved in it. And if you're under a Republican administration like the Trump administration that's giving you cover, right, you don't have to worry about state attorneys general, you know, sending you a bunch of lawsuits that you have to go hire legal help to defend yourself against. Now with President Biden, though, there's accountability for loan servicers, right, with both at the CFPB, both at the federal student aid office, but then also at state, the individual state level with state lawsuits that Navient's having to respond to. So the vast majority of those lawsuits and negative press and negative legal attention is coming over the student loan servicing mess. So if you look at something and think about you being a business person for a second, despite, you know, all the negative feelings a lot of people have towards Navient, just pretend that you're leading the company and you're looking at your business lines and you see one of them's 6% of revenues, but accounts for 90% of all lawsuits and negative press. What are you going to do? You're going to try to get rid of that business, right? Or at least that part of your business. That is why they're dropping out. They are transferring their loans. They're at least trying to transfer their loans to a company called Maximus. This is concerning to me because Maximus is the company that manages student loan defaults for the Department of Education. Go and ask anybody, has the Department of Education managed student loan defaults well over the past 10 years? And the answer is absolutely freaking no, not at all. So you're turning over student loan servicing for 6 million people from Navient, which at least is a large organization that has experience managing income-based repayments. I'm not saying they have experience managing them well, but at least they have a lot of customer service reps. They have experience with the scripts that they've made. So you're taking all that institutional knowledge they've built up over the past 10 years of these programs, and you're handing all that over to a company that primarily is dealing with collections and collections law. That's not a recipe for success at all. I don't want to scare anybody that has Navient student loans. Like, what we need to realize is the data behind your student loans are all saved, you know, in the central data warehouse of the NSLDS, the Federal Student Aid website. That's totally separate from your loan servicer. So you don't need to freak out if you're going for 20-year forgiveness or 25-year forgiveness and you have loans with Navient and they're going to move over to this Maximus company potentially. You don't need to be afraid of that, because we've already taken that into account with our advice that we give our clients in terms of all the servicer changes that could happen over time, right? That's why what you want is you want an easy to understand, straightforward strategy for your loans that is durable. So that's another thing that we give advice on. Like, a lot of times people want us to save every dime for getting the exact right strategy, you know, go from separate to joint, amend 3 years in the past at this date, you know, stay on this plan and then do alternative documentation of income, but then go back to doing Form 8958 and equalizing tax return income, all these really complicated strategies that we know how to do. We still like to say with our consultants, what is the simplest strategy that won't cost somebody a freaking ton of money? So that's basically our philosophy on student loan advice is come up with the simplest strategy that's not so simple that it costs somebody a lot of money. Because there are some real complex strategies that save a ton of money for our clients. And we explain those like when we're making a plan. But nobody that has a student loan plan from us needs to worry about these loan servicer transitions. I'm more worried about the people that are just kind of like the casual like people with their student loans that are sort of like, oh, like Navient sent me something. I guess maybe I should pay it. Those people are going to have a hard time. So let's talk about FedLoan a little bit. FedLoan is out as well. You could kind of sense the just deep disgust or deep lack of interest in being involved in this process anymore when Senator Warren sent a letter to the loan servicers asking for what their plan was to restart payments after this almost 2 year pause. And FedLoan was sort of like, well, you know what? It would be great if we got clear instructions from lawmakers about how we're supposed to start repayments and when. Now, again, FedLoan saying that is rich because, you know, nobody should really feel bad for FedLoan. They've done a terrible job, right? They've certainly not been a good investment for taxpayers in terms of how they manage things. Why is FedLoan getting out of the program? Navient's a for-profit, so I think Navient is simply making a pure business decision that the pros are vastly outweighed by the cons of them being in this business from a profitable standpoint. FedLoan's actually a not-for-profit. They're owned by the Pennsylvania Higher Education Authority, FHIA, and this parent company kind of got created back in the day to sort of just focus on making loans to, you know, students in Pennsylvania. And then the FHIA people thought, hey, you know, it'd be great. Maybe if we made this new loan servicer, we could apply for managing federal student loans. We could make a bunch of money and have an extra reason for being, maybe an extra reason to justify our nice fat salaries. And I think the people that run this agency have been the target of so much headache over this decision to manage a really horrific nine-headed monster of the, what do they call that? Like the Hydra monster in Greek mythology that has all the heads or something. You cut off one, two grow back. I mean, that's kind of like the student loan system in terms of playing whack-a-mole. So FedLoan decided, hey, you know what? Let's just shut this thing down. The FHIA people run the parent company. So the people that run this Pennsylvania Higher Education Authority, that's a nonprofit company, I think the idea was, hey, if we could grow this loan servicer to be pretty big, maybe we can make, you know, $1 million a year. something like that. But instead, this is such a big headache that I think that they're going the opposite direction and saying, you know what would be awesome is if we could make like 200 grand a year, only worry about making a few loans to kids in Pennsylvania, you know, private student loans, and just like totally ignore federal student loans, you know, and just not get involved in it anymore. So you've got two different kinds of companies that are getting out of student loan servicing for somewhat different reasons. But the incentives of loan servicing are very clear, which is if you're not going to get paid a lot of money to do it, you're going to take on a huge legal liability for doing a bad job. Why would you do it? That's going to cause a lot of problems for Department of Education in terms of managing vendors going forward. You have to pay a lot of money if you're going to hold companies to a very high standard. I mean, it's kind of like just a business reality. I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that that's going to cause a lot of problems for consumers. Congress refuses to, you know, adequately fund high-level student loan servicing and fund, you know, good wages for the people answering the phones so that they are able to hire really competent people to give you good advice. Congress is really super cheap on that part. And so what happens when you're super cheap? You get shoddy service. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. So now let's talk about public service loan forgiveness. I want to say that this is really awesome if you're in the public service loan forgiveness program or you're going for it or you're trying to get it. That said, I don't want to sound cranky old man skeptical, but I'm skeptical. And again, the reason is look at the track record. Temporary expanded PSLF, creating new programs for PSLF, like payment options that are lower than what previously existed, like pay as you earn, for example. When you make these programs that are a little bit more generous, what matters is not just making the program, it's how you execute it. And again, when you put servicers in place and don't pay them very much and then rely on them to execute it, I'm a little concerned. What probably will happen, what I would guess, if you had to sort of force me to give a prediction right now, I think a lot of these reforms of public service loan forgiveness that could be coming down the pipeline, I think they will benefit people that are highly engaged, highly educated, higher income, higher debt, disproportionately graduate degree holders, probably wealthier on average, probably whiter on average. And I think that these fixes are going to miss a lot of the disenfranchised, underrepresented people out there just because of the way they're going about it. So that's the negative part. Let me talk about the positive part, okay? So the executive order that could be coming down the pipeline, and by the time this comes out, it might actually have been issued, and we'll have further episodes. Don't worry. We'll have a lot of future episodes on this and what this student loan reform and PSLF reform, income-based repayment reform, what it all means. We're going to dive deep into this, and it's not going to happen super fast. So don't get worried like you're going to turn around and miss something, okay? Supposedly, according to NPR, there are short-term PSLF fixes coming and long-term PSLF fixes coming. The things that the Biden administration hopes to address is borrowers who were denied PSLF or have less PSLF credit than they should have based off of a few different things. So the wrong repayment plan. A lot of borrowers signed up for the extended plan or the graduated plan, right? And they didn't qualify for PSLF because they were signed up for the wrong type of plan. A lot of borrowers had the wrong kind of loans. There's these loans called FFEL loans. If you listen to this podcast a lot, you know probably what those are. Those are loans issued before 2010. Those FFEL loans are loans that were not eligible for public service loan forgiveness when Congress wrote the law. They're also talking about including payments made on older loans before consolidation into direct loans as well in considering loan forgiveness applications. So what does this really mean? Let me state this another way. So the Biden administration, what they want to do is take any loans that were the wrong type, any payment plans that were on the wrong payment plan, and payments that were made on loans before a consolidation. They want to basically count public service loan forgiveness credit for all of those mistakes, for lack of a better word. So all of the bad information people got from servicers that caused them to do a lot of these things, the Biden administration wants to fix all of that by giving PSLF credit for anybody that was on the wrong repayment plan, had the wrong kind of loans, or who made payments on loans before a consolidation. That's huge, guys. That's massive. If they actually do that, then we could be talking about a massive amount of debt being eligible for forgiveness, and everybody needs to pay attention to this. That's super exciting. It's potentially game-changing. It's going to make some people really happy. It's going to make some people who refinance their FFEL loans because they know that they couldn't get PSLF really upset So my first question when reading this, I was like, wow, this sounds awesome. But then I was like, how can they do this? So this is what I want to be following is this going to be an executive order that just sort of happens and doesn't get a lot of scrutiny or anything? Or is this something that's going to be super controversial? It's going to gin up a lot of negative attention. My question about can they do this is mostly based off of like the cost. So if you're talking about making loans eligible that had the wrong kind of loans, that were on the wrong repayment plan, that were on loans made pre-consolidation, this is just a real rough guess. There's about $230 billion of FFEL loans around today. There was about $480 billion, I think, around 10 years ago. So all of the loans that are FFEL today were around 10 years ago. So all of the FFEL loans could be potentially eligible for PSLF under this potential order that we might have. Also, direct loans, my estimate is maybe, this is a real rough guess, maybe $170 billion of direct loans were around 10 years ago that are also around today. So say about $400 billion of loans are around today, and 25% of people could qualify for PSLF, given that like about 25% of the workforce works for the government or a nonprofit. So in a perfect world, that could be like $100 billion that could be eligible for PSLF, and they put an application date on this of October 31st, 2022. What could go wrong? Potentially trying to give $100 billion of loan forgiveness by October of 2022. Yes, the CARES Act student loan relief of pausing payments and interest cost probably a similar amount, but that had a little bit more bipartisan support, and this is something that could be drawing partisan attention potentially. So this is another reason why I'm like, wait a second. I want to get excited about this, but like, could this really happen? Just because how are they going to get $100 billion to do this? Well, it's the same way that President Trump and President Biden got the money to do the extension of the CARES Act relief without Congress. They sort of used this authority in this thing called the HEROES Act in 2003, which gives the president the authority to make sure borrowers are no worse off than they would have been otherwise in the event of a national disaster. So they sort of said, okay, then that means the president can pause payments and interest to make sure that borrowers are no worse off, you know, during this COVID period than they would have been pre-COVID, right? So that's kind of the idea. So I've heard like some people throw around the idea that maybe that's the authority that the president would be relying on to make these big changes in PSLF for short-term fix. But I don't know. I mean, this is a lot of money, and the statute seems pretty clear. I'm not a lawyer, so I want to say that, but the statute seems pretty clear that these things are not what is in the law, right? So if you look at the statute for PSLF, I looked this up for today's podcast just to try to figure out what this order could mean. So this is in 685.219, section C, and subsections 3 and 4. Public service loan forgiveness says that you have to make 120 separate payments after October 2007 on eligible direct loans. So it doesn't say FFEL loans in the statute. It also says that you have to make the 120 payments after October of 2007. And it also says, what are the qualifying repayment plans? It says IBR, income-based repayment, income contingent repayment, standard 10-year, and except for the alternative repayment plan, any plan where the payment is at least that of the standard plan. So yes, you know, they've rewritten these rules a little bit to include things like revised pay-as-you-earn and pay-as-you-earn, but you know, nowhere in there does it say that you can sort of include a payment that's made such as the extended or the graduated. Now, that's why I was thinking, well, maybe they're going to kind of look at the temporary expanded public service loan forgiveness statute or law that was passed by Congress that did kind of expand the options for payments that could be counted towards public service loan forgiveness. Like maybe that is what they would lean into. But the temporary expanded public service loan forgiveness doesn't have a lot of money left compared to the demand that would be present for this kind of a fix. For example, temporary expanded public service loan forgiveness, I think this is just off the top of my head, y'all, but I think that they authorized $750 million for that. And I think they've used up $129 million of it already. So about maybe 20% or 15% of it. So if you expand public service loan forgiveness eligibility to all FFEL loans, all repayment plans, you know, you allow people to count payments made before consolidations, that money would get used up in like 1 month if they did actually rely on this previous appropriation. So that's why I'm a little confused. I mean, I want to see the executive order. I want to digest it. I want to see it held up to scrutiny so that I can give you good advice on whether or not you should get super excited about this or not. I mean, it seems initially that it's like pretty exciting, and I don't want to say that it's not, but it's just sort of like, given the history here, we have to be a little cautious. How likely do I think this is going to happen? I mean, I think that there's some executive orders it's going to go through that's going to help more people get PSLF. I think that's pretty certain. The main issue I think that might happen is like, well, if they rely on some sort of national disaster authority and it ends up being a lot more expensive than they thought, you know, then you could see some legal challenges over this, right? I think that's kind of like my main concern about like people getting super excited about this and then having the door shut in your face, right? I mean, I guess it wouldn't matter probably if people start getting forgiveness. Like you probably wouldn't see like a sort of an after-the-fact reinstatement of loans, right? So I think that's kind of what they're counting on, the administration, is if they can get a lot of these forgivenesses processed, even if there is some sort of legal challenge, they won't be able to undo it. So I think that's kind of the play here. So if you think about this process that they've proposed for this short-term PSLF fix, and this is according to the NPR article, by the way, and the NPR article said that the proposed application deadline for applying for this fix is October 31st, 2022. So that set off alarm bells for me, because if you have an application deadline for something, that means that some people will not apply that are eligible. And if you think about if there is some sort of fixed pot of money available, that'll get used up right away. If there's not a fixed pot of money available where it's sort of unlimited, even if it's unlimited, you're still going to have a lot of people that are going to just not be super engaged and focused on loans. And they might just fail to apply or fail to apply the right way by that application deadline. Who's going to be successful in this? It's going to be you guys. You guys listening to this podcast. There's people on Facebook that are part of huge Facebook groups that help people out with loan forgiveness. You know, there's all kinds of people out there that are very engaged in this that tend to be very shrewd, very smart, very engaged, very knowledgeable, right? I mean, just the other day, I was hanging out with some friends, and one of the parents in this parent group we're part of talked about how she was very strategic in making sure that she got PSLF first before changing her job status. Like, that's super engaged, like super high-level organized thinking, right? And it's what we advocate for people to do, by the way. We're not saying this is a bad thing. That's a wonderful thing. What I'm a little concerned about is that lower-income, underrepresented borrowers, borrowers of color, people are not going to get this benefit, and what we might see is inequity in this process in a big way. And you might say, well, Travis, you're a hypocrite. You charge a few hundred dollars for student loan consulting. Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. But I think that what we try to do is provide a ton of free information for people that can't afford our help to make sure that they get some good advice too, even if they can't afford it. But I'll take my lumps. I think that we probably deserve a little criticism in that regard. I mean, in terms of any kind of PSLF short-term fix, who is going to benefit? It's going to be a 30-something physician on two or three Facebook groups listening to this podcast, following our newsletter. They're going to benefit. They're going to potentially get a lot of money from this, right? Who's not going to benefit? The single mom making $30,000 a year working two jobs who's too busy to follow big loan forgiveness threads or listening to boring podcasts from yours truly. So I don't know. I mean, I think that there will be huge inequity in this fix. Feels inevitable, but that shouldn't stop you from using it either. I don't know. It's kind of like the tax code. There's tax code's messed up. There's a lot of loopholes. A lot of people get screwed over that could benefit from things that don't. Should that stop you from trying to get the best help that you can to pay as little as you legally have to? No, because you just have to sort of accept that the world's an imperfect place and just try to do the best you can. So that's what I'm going to encourage people to do, is take advantage of this. If whatever order ends up coming out, we're going to help you take advantage of it, because it's you're going to pay taxes for it anyway, long term, right? You absolutely pay this cost at some point. So you might as well get the benefits that are associated with the higher taxes you're going to have to pay long term. So I think that that's real important, is to get every last dime of benefit from this. In terms of, does this affect, you know, your thought process on refinancing and paying the loans off? Well, no, not really, because if you think about our advice on that, it's been pretty much the same for a while. And, you know, we've even predicted that they might take a look at some of these longer term PSLF fixes for several months now. So I think that, you know, if you work in the private sector and you have debt smaller than your income, then it's a no-brainer that you would pay your loans off because you're not going to get any forgiveness or cancellation or anything like that. You know, we predicted that there was not going to be any broad cancellation for people based off of reading the political tea leaves. So, you know, I think that you just have to follow these announcements and follow these executive orders and then just try to benefit from them as best you can without worrying about just all the fact how messed up the system is. So in addition to short-term PSLF fixes, the Biden administration also wants to make some long-term PSLF changes that are going to be done through a process called negotiated rulemaking. This is a really big deal because presumably it would be the only negotiated rulemaking process for student loans during the Biden administration. Now, I mean, I guess if he were to go for a second term, maybe you could argue there could be another one, but this is going to be, at least until 2025, the big change for rules that you know, will be focused on student loans. I don't necessarily think that there's going to be a big congressional action on student loans compared to this negotiated rulemaking. So what is negotiated rulemaking? It's basically this process where a group of people representing the executive branch make new interpretations of regulations for different kinds of programs, federal programs. So public service loan forgiveness, income-based repayment, all of these things are big federal programs that will be affected by this process. There's also other things like borrower defense to repayment, you know, just a lot of different things with the Department of Education. So the executive branch picks a bunch of people to sit on a committee and they come up with these new regulations, and the process takes a really long time to actually get them enacted. So I actually was really lucky and had a client that was somebody who used to work for the Senate, and she really knew this process for negotiated rulemaking way better than I did. And so she said that for new rules to take effect by the school year starting in like June 30th, July 1st, all of that rulemaking process has to be finished by the preceding November. So that would mean this November of 2021, they'd have to have the negotiated rulemaking process finished by then. They will not. So what that means is that the earliest any of these changes could take effect would be like June, July of 2023. So we're going to see this next 2022 year for student loans, the big action is going to be this negotiated rulemaking process, and it's going to be a big deal. So among the changes they're discussing for public service loan forgiveness, they're all positive changes, by the way, in terms of people getting more access to the program. But some of the changes they're talking are giving credit for late payments or payments made in installments. They're talking about giving credit for certain kinds of deferment and forbearance, such as active duty deferment and economic hardship forbearance. So if you're serving in the military, for example, deferment doesn't count towards PSLF. That seems like a pretty obvious oversight. So they're going to look at changing that. And they also are looking at expanding the definition of not-for-profits that qualify for PSLF to include groups like, for example, potentially Kaiser Permanente. We've talked about that for a few months, that some of these groups that employ for-profit physician groups that happen to be nonprofit hospitals, that they might change those rules. What's kind of interesting is in the proposals for these, they always talk about nurses working at for-profit groups, never physicians working at for-profit groups because the nurses are politically a better example, right? But the physicians would certainly be included if they made a change to include people working at not-for-profits that are employed technically by for-profits. And that's a good change in the sense that, you know, there's no reason why those people should be excluded. That was just a mistake with the way they wrote the program regulations in the first place. So those are some of the long-term fixes. And this is all, again, according to this NPR article, what does that mean? Well, it means that the long-term fixes are different from the short-term fixes. So the short-term fixes are sort of saying, all right, this is the one opportunity that you have. If you have a FFEL loan payments that were made before a consolidation was happened, maybe you pay it on the wrong repayment plan, the extended plan, or whatever. What this kind of seems like to me is you've got until like fall of 2022 to figure it out or else forever hold your peace. That's what it kind of seems like to me. So I don't necessarily think that that's going to be a permanent change that's going to help everybody long term. That's just going to be a short term fix that's either going to be managed according to whoever applies by that application date and whoever applies before the funds run out, and then that's it, right? Now, the long-term fixes are going to maybe apply for loans going forward. I would be a little surprised if these got changed retroactively. So, for example, talking about giving credit for forbearance or active duty deferment or potentially residency deferment My guess is if they're going through the negotiated rulemaking process to make those changes, that those changes would happen for loans going forward and not going backwards. So that's some bad news for people that had a bunch of payments that were made during, you know, or a bunch of forbearances, or maybe they worked for Kaiser already for 10 years. I would be a little surprised if they applied those fixes looking backwards. So that's something to think about, right? What's the difference between a short-term fix and a long-term fix? The short-term fix is going to come out of whatever executive order they're thinking about doing for public service loan forgiveness. A longer-term fix is going to happen with this negotiated rulemaking process, which we're not going to see the rules change until at least summer of 2023. Now, what about the political ramifications of all of this? So one of the things that we said cautionarily about people who expected getting their loans canceled was that we did not think that the executive order out for student loan cancellation would survive a legal challenge to a very conservative Supreme Court. So similarly, if there's a big order on PSLF and if it gets expensive, would there potentially be any legal roadblocks to these changes happening? I wrote an article a couple years ago about how public service loan forgiveness would start costing more than the annual budget of NASA starting in the mid-2020s. Right now, it's only costing, you know, a few hundred million dollars a year, which on the federal government's budget is a pittance. But once it starts costing 30, 40, 50 billion a year, you better believe this is going to start drawing some more attention. I kind of initially thought that PSLF would not be something really brought up until the 2024 election cycle. But if these costs get pushed forward with some of these student loan executive orders and reforms, there's a good chance that we could even see negative attention on PSLF as soon as the 2022 midterms. If you think about PSLF, I don't really think that you can have, you know, a continuation of the status quo. It's either going to get repealed because voters look at it and say, wow, that's expensive, or Congress looks at it and says, wow, that's a lot more expensive than we thought. So it's either going to get repealed or it's going to grow and there'll be probably even more generous forgiveness, right? If I had to just guess, I would probably guess that it would grow, not shrink. But that's something that's it's a risk factor to at least be aware of. Now, if something got repealed, right, we always talk about how grandfathering has always been recognized from both parties. It would apply to only people that are not yet enrolled in a program. So people that are already pursuing loan forgiveness would be fine. But from a long-term perspective, the quicker these loan forgiveness programs start having negative effects on the budget, the quicker that both parties might be interested in sort of reforming these. There was a really good podcast from The Economist that I listened to this past week talking about the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, the Build Back Better Act. And they sort of talked about how the American system, they essentially want to create sort of European-style safety net programs with American-style taxes. And basically, if you look at Denmark, for example, the top marginal tax rate starts at a average income level, like in the middle class, you start seeing their top marginal income tax rate. And they have also very high sales taxes called VAT taxes. And so they were talking about, like, if we see this trend in America towards more of a progressive safety net system, that you would likely have to see a bunch of tax increases basically on people in the middle income levels. And so that's a question that I have longer term, is you have a lot of competing policy goals. And if you have loan forgiveness end up being very expensive, if you have a political choice of raising taxes on middle income earners or making it more means tested or limiting PSLF to saying $50,000 of forgiveness for more middle income people, like what change might happen, right? So I think this is more of like a look forward basis. Like if I was sending my child to medical school like 6 years from now, I would probably say don't go with the expectation of public service loan forgiveness, because I think that what might happen is maybe it'll get means tested if you're kind of counting on Democrats being in charge, or it might just get repealed if you're counting on Republicans being in charge. And if you think about the income-based repayment programs that we might have coming down the pipeline with negotiated rulemaking, President Biden is considering making a new income-based repayment program, which it's kind of funny, like I did a survey once of our audience and I said, how many people want a new income-based repayment program? I think like 1% of people said yes. In other words, like that's like a disgusting thing for people to have yet another income-based repayment program to confuse people. I'm sure that they will try to take that into account with maybe trying to make this the default program for people going forward. But, you know, it's just interesting that the solution to the student loan brokenness that's out there is, well, let's just make another program, instead of thinking about how all these programs go together and how they work, you know, in concert with one another, there's always this, oh, we're going to fix it, and then they never do, no matter who's in charge, right? From a political standpoint, what kind of matters for the support of a program is, do you get a bunch of pushback? I think that we're going to start seeing some pushback, like in the next, say, 5 years, from business interests against PSLF. And why do I say that? Well, if business interests are included in this loan forgiveness, then they're going to be happy about it. But if they're excluded and it causes them staffing problems, then I think that they would be more opposed to it. So consider HCA Hospital, one of the largest for-profit hospital chains in America. Imagine you're HCA Hospital and you control a bunch of, you know, you have a huge system with a bunch of physicians and nurses and medical staff, et cetera. And let's say you're in a fairly competitive market, you know, maybe like a Nashville or something. And I don't know if they have HCA and Vanderbilt there, but I'm just assuming they do. So let's say that you have, you know, a big medical system and then you have Vanderbilt. If somebody realizes that loan forgiveness is worth like 50 to 100 grand a year as an indirect bonus to them, once it's really clear that PSLF is this durable, very surefire thing, that's when people are going to more en masse start switching jobs, right? Like, would you take a job for $30,000 less pay? The answer is no, except if you could get public service loan forgiveness and it's worth $100,000 a year to you for 5 years of work out of residency, then the answer would be yes. So if you start seeing a lot of people like quitting your jobs, or you start having recruitment problems because people know you're not PSLF eligible, what's going to happen is I think these business interests are going to start making negative noise about the program and how it's negatively impacting their business interests. And don't underestimate the power of corporate lobbyists and people like that, right? I think that they would rather just have their people be included in these loan forgiveness programs, don't get me wrong. But if they don't, what's going to happen when you see a bunch of people start quitting for-profit employers for not-for-profit employers, and what kind of impact will that have on PSLF? You know, what happens when private practice family physicians realize they're getting shut out while a lot of their subspecialist friends they went to medical school with get all of it wiped? You know, what happens when dentists and veterinarians realize that physicians basically all get their loans forgiven after 10 years while they have to wait 20 years? Some might say, you know, shame on you, Travis, for pitting groups against each other. I'm not saying that. I'm saying what I think politicians and maybe conservatives opposed to PSLF might do. And I'm trying to predict, like, long-term, what kind of negative headlines you might see about PSLF. So think about the IT worker that works at HCA versus the IT worker that works at Vanderbilt Hospital. Basically no difference in what they do. Both of them help fortify systems, prevent hackers potentially, right? Serving the public, right? But one person gets loan forgiveness after 10 years tax-free and one person doesn't. So that's going to create huge distortions in the labor market when you're talking about, you know, a large group of people that are eligible and a large group of people that are not. And my question is what's going to happen with the program more long-term? Short-term, I think these executive orders and these reforms are going to enable you to get more forgiveness, not less. And that's something that we can be excited about. It's something that we're going to look out for you on. So we're going to look out for how do you maximize the benefit. We're going to look at, you know, how do you go through this application process if they come up with one. We're going to look at what are the good parts of the executive order that you can count on, which are the parts that might be more challenging or you maybe shouldn't rely on as much. I just try to predict the future based on trends and based off of things that developments that I see happening. I think that, you know, certainly if you have old FFEL loans, if you have loans that you are considering refinancing that potentially could be public service loan forgiveness eligible, I'd tap the brakes hard. I would be a lot slower depending what might be happening with this reform process. But at the same token, one of the things that was telegraphed in some of the discussions around making a new income-based program with the Biden administration is one of the questions was essentially like, should high-income borrowers pay more on income-based repayment? So what they're saying there is Senator Warren, when she ran for president, she had a new income-based repayment proposed plan. And the plan phased out the 150% of the poverty line deduction above a certain income level. I think it was 100,000 or something like that. So in other words, instead of like getting a big deduction for before you have to pay 10% of your income, Senator Warren's plan essentially called for higher income people to pay more and pay a higher percent of their income on income-based repayment, which is interesting because if you think about income-based repayment, it ends up being an income tax if loan forgiveness makes sense for you to pursue. And what do we have in America? We have a progressive income tax. So it's possible that a new income-based repayment program might allow low-income borrowers to pay a lower percent of their income, like say 5%, and it might require higher income borrowers to pay a higher percent of their income. So these are all things that we're going to be monitoring very closely. If anybody in policy is listening to this, what I would ask for borrowers is spend more money on loan servicing. It would probably be better for borrowers to take even $1 billion off of the planned amount for forgiveness and throw it in loan servicing to make that system better. I don't think it's going to happen, unfortunately, because Congress is super cheap. But if you make really complex rules and underfund the contracts for the companies whose job it is to make sure those rules are implemented, you know, Department of Ed doesn't have a bazillion people on staff to make sure these rules get implemented correctly. So Department of Ed can try to hold people accountable. They can, kind of criticize, use the bully pulpit and criticize these loan servicers. But when the loan servicers are looking at their revenues and they say, like Nabian did, okay, only 6% of our revenue is with loan servicing. We're getting hit from, by the way, hitting the loan servicers, I think, deservedly. But, CFPB, Department of Ed are hitting these servicers from all sides. State attorney generals are getting into this as well. So you have things like Nabian and FedLoans saying, we're out. We don't want to be a part of this. Someone's going to take the government's money with these loan servicer transitions. But when you talk about doing a massive short-term PSLF fix, you talk about doing a massive long-term PSLF reform, you talk about doing yet another income-driven repayment program with the inability to take away these old programs from people like pay-as-you-earn and repay that are in people's promissory notes. So you probably don't have the authority to pull those payment programs away from people, even if you did make a program that was requiring higher income borrowers to pay more, then it's just going to create problems, right? Because you're hiring Maximus and you're hiring Mohila, two companies that are smaller and have no real experience managing federal loans well, in my opinion. And you're just saying, oh, it's going to go well. I guess one bit of good news is Great Lakes and Nelnet got a contract extension this past week for an extra 2 years. So that's good. So if you have Great Lakes and Nelnet, you're not going to have your loan servicer change now until 2023 at the earliest. So that's good. But Mohila uses the same back-end processing software that FedLoan's parent company built. It's called Compass. So Mohila and FedLoan, they're using the same software. And Mohila, they've already started transferring loans over to Mohila to see how it goes before they transition everything around December. So FedLoan's really out, y'all. They're not going to be around. They're not sticking around. It's really they're really over with. Do we think, Maximus and Mohila will do a better job than Avient and FedLoan? No, I don't. And, with servicers continuing to do a bad job, I think calls for canceling debt will continue to grow because the system that's really complex, when you're underfunding the administration of it, it's not going to work very well. So we'll see. Just remember that we're going to be here for you no matter what, unless student loans all get forgiven, in which case you're on your own because we don't have a job to do anymore. But assuming that does not happen, we're going to be monitoring this for you. We're going to be helping you get forgiveness. We're going to be helping you explaining what the application process might look like with whatever executive orders of PSLF come out. If some of the executive orders included some things or didn't include some things that I talked about in today's episode, I'm sorry. We're just trying to get this out as quickly as possible. So things are changing in real time a lot faster than they usually do this week. I'll say this too, just like you shouldn't wait to the last second if you're trying to order a car and you might have to wait extra weeks, that you weren't anticipating because of supply chain issues. I've hired new consultants on our team to try to anticipate the demand that will exist come January, but I can't be sure that it will be enough. So if you want a plan and you want your choice of times to talk about your plan, we allow bookings up to 60 days in advance. So we are allowing people to book into early December right now. So I would sort of suggest that if you are planning on getting a plan for repayment starts that, either this month or next month, certainly in November, you should see appointments available in January. And I would reserve one of those early since they don't require you to put an upfront payment because we bill after the fact. So if you do want a student loan plan, studentloanplanner.com/help, you can book with our team and reserve one of those plans ahead of time so that you're not having to wait weeks when I'm expecting that we're going to get really busy with all of these crazy transitions and changes with loan servicers that are all seemingly happening all at once. Of course, if you can't afford our help or you just want to ask a question, remember you can go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail and you can leave a question for the podcast and I'll definitely answer some of those. And I just want to say, you know, it's going to be okay. All these changes, it's kind of like a little chaotic. It's a little scary. My team sent me a message and they're like, it would be great if next week there wasn't 500 changes about student loans in 1 week, because our inbox is like lighting up with thousands of emails. And we're doing our best to get back to you because you are the reason we do this. Every person that contacts us, we view this as a mission-driven company where we can change someone's life. And just like last week, we had a conversation with someone. We helped somebody who thought they were never going to be able to retire in their 60s. We showed her how she can retire in a few years because she didn't understand how the loan rules worked, where she could take advantage of some loopholes and pay a lot less than she thought she could pay. And that was really rewarding. You know, when you take somebody who thinks they're working for the rest of their lives and shows them instead, hey, you know what? You can have golden years like you never dreamed were possible. So that's what I really love doing. That's what gets me up in the morning. That's what makes me excited about doing podcasts like this. So sorry if at all I seemed like I'm cranky old man like in this podcast. I just get frustrated because it's like, this might sound like this is being done all for borrowers and, you know, oh, borrowers are the priority. And I think they are. Like, I think the people that make these rules really do care about borrowers. But at the same time, I think that a lot of times, like, the execution just gets thrown out the window. And it's like, it doesn't matter if you have good intentions or a good, like, plan. What also matters is how well do you execute. And that's what's always failed the student loan system. So I hope that we can be a part of helping you execute and getting the most out of whatever benefits get passed. So we're going to be following this for you. Studentloanplanner.com/help if you need help with this. Also, studentloanplanner.com/refi if you want to try to lock in a low rate with interest rates seemingly going up pretty rapidly the past couple weeks. So reach out if you have any questions. I'm Travis, the Student Loan Planner. Thanks, everyone, for listening.